Coming up on the Social Hour, Facebook Groups gets Dropbox integration very handy. Download all of your tweets, at least by the end of the year. And MySpace is back? What? All that and NFC business cards. What will they think of next on the Social Hour?
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 79, recorded Friday, September 28th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford. Ford invites us tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP, that's SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media in a systematic way with Social Media Solutions from SAP. Learn more at sap.com/twit. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Amber. How is life up in the Great Northern?
Well, you know, I finally recovered from the iPhone 5 launch. I know you were also busy that week. It was kind of a crazy week when that particular phone launched, and it took me a couple of days. I had like an iPhone 5 hangover. Like, I couldn't forget about all the new information that had come out about the phone and all the lineups and everything. So I'm feeling much better this week than I did last week, and things are going great.
I'm glad to hear it. Anybody who missed our show last week, we got a little bit of a fun little, I was going to say Easter egg, but it wasn't an Easter egg at all. It was very blatant. Leo Laporte sat down next to me here on the set in the studio, opened up the iPhone 5. We don't really do unboxings on the Social Hour, at least not with any regularity, so that was kind of a treat. I will just say, Amber, and I was sort of complaining about it before the show, my iPhone is apparently lost in transit. That's the last correspondence I've gotten from UPS, and I was supposed to have it yesterday, and then I was supposed to have it today. It's coming to the studio. And I don't think I'm actually going to have it in my hot little hands until Monday. So as you're recovering, your hangover is finally lifting from the iPhone 5. I have yet to actually receive mine. So whatever.
Whatever. I know. Better. Yeah. Well, hopefully you will have it soon, Sarah. It's not as much of a life-changing experience as I wanted it to be, but nonetheless, it's lighter. And therefore, I lose it more in my big purses and bags.
Yeah. You know, I'm absolutely worried about the same thing. I already have a phone losing problem with my phone that seems pretty bright and hard to lose. Very easy to lose. Very easy to lose. So something that's lighter, I know what's going to happen is it'll be in my purse and I'll say something like, I can tell it's not in here. Purse is too light. And then I'll freak out and it'll be in a pocket and rinse, repeat.
Yep.
So we got an email from Chrissy in Portland, Oregon, who had a suggestion. I think actually some of the stuff that we're covering today is going to make you a little happier, Chrissy. She writes, I really love that there's a show just about social media. I've enjoyed it. I do social media marketing, and I'd love it if you did more stories on business social media. Seems like you mostly focus on personal use of social. I know Facebook is always changing things, and I'm not up to date at all. I'd like to hear more about the newest changes and additions to social media for businesses. And I think that's a really good point, Amber. We certainly try to cover it all, but we probably do skew more consumer. And maybe for a lot of our audience, that's really how they'd prefer us to skew, but not everybody. We definitely have a lot of people who work in the social media space, and we want to make sure that we're giving the business portion of all of this adequate representation as well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think the good news for the people out there who are in social media marketing and doing social media business is because we do skew on the consumer side a little bit, you'll still be able to get lots of value out of the show in the sense that you have to understand what consumers are doing, what they want, where they're going, and all of those trends to be able to do your job as a marketer. But I totally agree. And I think on this episode, I think we were a little bit more careful to have more of a balance. And in fact, I was just thinking, Sarah, if it was okay with you, maybe every week for our social media, not the spotlight we do, but usually have the tweet of the week, maybe doing a social media spotlight on a specific social media campaign. So starting to include that as well. So we'll beef it up a little bit and see how it goes.
Sounds great to me. That's a great idea. You did mention Facebook specifically, Chrissy, and it has been a Facebook heavy week this week. even more so than usual, because we're always saying that. But some of the bigger stories, and, you know, we should say right off the bat, this isn't even in our lineup, but Facebook has introduced Facebook gifts. Amber, I don't know how much you had read about that already today, but it's the idea that, let's say it's your birthday or I'm just thinking about you and I want to do something nice for you. I can now use Facebook to pick a gift, a physical gift, like, I don't know, a chocolate bar or a teddy bear or, you know, a book of stickers or something, and have it sent to you physically. The way that you would send any present in the mail, which I think is kind of interesting.
I think we did talk about a service that was almost similar to that. I want to say it's called Wrap with two P's, but I'm not exactly sure. I do think it was launched in Sweden, and maybe it was a Facebook app that did something along the same line. So it's not something we haven't heard of anymore. And yeah, kind of interesting, I think, for people, especially with so many people having birthdays that are highlighted on Facebook. And so it helps all of us remember if we're forgetful, which happens to me a lot.
And I know with me, it's like anyone whose birthday shows up, or at least I'm on Facebook enough to say, oh, that person I went to high school with is, you know, 35 or something now. It's like I don't necessarily know them that well. I'm certainly not even going to send them a birthday card or anything, but it's very easy to say happy birthday on Facebook. But it kind of, you know, for someone that you really do care about, saying happy birthday on Facebook, you know that they know it's not hard to do, and it doesn't really mean that much. Unless, I guess, you're selective about who you say happy birthday to. I say happy birthday to everybody because it's like, it's just a birthday, so you say happy birthday. But if it was someone that you really care about and you say not only happy birthday on your Facebook wall, but by the way, I bought you $15 worth of Starbucks credits because I know you love your pumpkin spice lattes, then it's sort of like a little bit of a above and beyond, hey, we're Facebook friends, and it's your birthday, and it doesn't really mean anything.
You know, I don't know if you have this problem, Sarah, but you know, being able to do stuff like that, being able to spend money on web services, being able to buy apps and songs so easily and rent movies, I feel like I have to go on a digital diet. And what I mean by that is when I look at my credit card statement, it's amazing how easy it is to click and spend money that way, and you don't really realize how much money you're spending. And so I love all of these things, but on the other hand, I think, wow, you know, you really end up burning through a lot of cash because purchasing anything in the web space just seems so simple, maybe too simple.
Yes, it's very impulse buy related. And it's preying on our impulses because it's sort of, yeah, okay, if I think about this too much, maybe I'll decide I don't really want to part with the $20 that it would take to send somebody this gift that I think that they would like. But once you do pay once, then Facebook has your credit card information on file. And not even getting to the privacy, potential privacy issues of that, just makes it that much easier for you to, the next time you want to send a gift to somebody, it's kind of like a one-click purchase, the way that I do with Amazon. Amazon's got my information, so it's that much easier for me to just quickly buy something, and I don't want to think about it too long and change my mind. It's just done.
Yeah, it's so easy. We have a couple of Facebook stories that we're going to plow through. At least one of them will be helpful for people, I think, who are using Facebook for business or for groups. First up, though, Facebook starts letting you view and delete your Facebook search history. I have never really thought a lot about this. I know there's been lots of talk about Facebook in terms of wanting to get further into the search space. But looks like now if you want to be able to go in and delete some of the things that you have searched for, you're able to do this within your activity log. I haven't thought a lot about wanting to do this, but now that I see this article and see news about this, I think it's something that I may end up potentially doing.
Yeah, this news rolled out earlier this week, and I've been just because I'm kind of curious, actually, because who really remembers everything that they've searched on Facebook, even in the last week, let alone the last several of years? I keep looking at my activity log, waiting for the search to show up in my little all section. It's a little drop-down menu in your activity log where you can say, I'd like to see everything that I've searched. And it has been rolling out this week. Clearly, it hasn't rolled out to me yet. Probably by this time next week, that'll be a different story. But my first reaction was, okay, well, I don't care what I've searched for, necessarily. I mean, unless it was like, oh, there was a friend of somebody, and now we're not friends. Like, I have to sort of remember what profile I had seen by accident. I guess that would come up every so often. But more than that, it's like, what does it really matter? Because this is a personal service for me. And if all of a sudden my activity of everyone I've been searching is traceable, then I have to worry about, well, if somebody got access to my account, is my activity log going to be used against me? Right now, I can't even search it, and neither can anybody else. So it's like, well, it's just irrelevant. Now that it's going to be available to me, I have to go in and delete it, or else I risk the idea that somebody else could go in and see it. I was talking to Tom Merritt about this earlier this week, and he goes, well, you just have a problem with Facebook's privacy settings then, right? I mean, you're worried about the security more than you're worried about the fact that your search history could be found by somebody. And I thought, I guess so, but Facebook has issues with that historically. So it just gives me one more thing to have to think about sort of behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree. I mean, I think I may end up going in and using it and just checking out for fun. I don't think I really do that much searching on Facebook, to be honest with you. And if I do searching, it's just once in a while because I've forgotten someone's last name. I'm trying to find them among, a list of friends or something like that. But I don't use it heavily. It probably makes me a little bit more nervous as far as what Facebook is thinking and why they're focusing so much on the ability to be able to delete stuff. It always makes me worried that, you know, maybe at some point they're thinking that, hey, it would be a good idea if we've made this public too, just because of the way that they operate. But hopefully it doesn't get to that point. And I suppose it's good that they're letting you have a little bit more control over it, even if no one else can see it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of, even if it's nobody else but you, it's also nobody at Facebook. If Facebook doesn't have search history, then you feel a little bit more in control of what you're doing on a regular basis on the network. It feels a little bit more like it is a personal service for you rather than Facebook taking all those times you searched for somebody and then starting to offer you up ads about Chicago because that person lives in Chicago or something. I'm not exactly sure what they would do with my search history, but dagnabbit, I don't want them to have it. This really ties into Facebook and the idea of social media for businesses. Facebook groups, which is something that can be extremely helpful in the business sector, is getting even more useful because it has introduced an agreement with Dropbox for Dropbox file sharing from within groups itself. Now, I don't actually have any groups that all my groups are sort of private. Not because they're, there's all sorts of great information, but I don't really have a group that I can show you. But we can look at this this blog from Dropbox that explains how exactly this works. And this is great. If you've got a group that you're using for a group of colleagues, let's say, maybe you don't all work in the same physical office and you're sharing a lot of not just ideas, but you got to share files back and forth. This is great if everyone is using Dropbox. Obviously, Dropbox is only one of many cloud services that you might be using to share files and photos and videos and things like that. But Dropbox is pretty widely used and widely accepted. I think this makes a lot of sense. What about you, Amber?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. When I was just reading the blog post about it, they were focusing a little bit on the idea that perhaps people on Facebook may have family groups, so a private place where you could share stuff with just individual family members. I think this is a fantastic way to use groups, to be honest with you, so everything isn't so public. And then the idea, as they mentioned in the blog post, that you'd be able to share a video maybe of a kid's birthday or something like that via Dropbox. So I think this is fun. You know, Dropbox is a fantastic service. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have used it, and the idea that it's integrated within Facebook is fantastic, even if it's just limited to groups right now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, okay, so this one is pretty funny. Let's say you're running a brand. You've got a Facebook page. You've got a social media manager or a group of people who are very active on the page. You're getting a lot of likes. So, you know, you've gone from 1,000 people who like your page to 50,000 people over the last 12 months, and you're feeling really good, and this is a metric that you're using all the time. You may have this week logged in and seen, oh my gosh, I lost 20,000 likes on my Facebook page. What happened? What did we do wrong? What's going on? Is there a glitch in the matrix? Probably not. You may have done something wrong, but more likely it's that you had a lot of fake people liking your page. Facebook is cracking down on fake accounts. So this is not just sort of spammy malware stuff, but this is, it's in many cases, as we all know, and this is not limited to Facebook, of course, a lot of these numbers of followers and likes and favorites and smiley faces and all that stuff is not exactly authentic. And you think, well, what would a fake account on Facebook have anything to gain by liking your page? Well, you might end up clicking through to that profile and then mistakenly clicking and playing a game of poker or something like that. Or buying some, I don't know, prescription medicine from, you know, it's just regular spam stuff. So I think even though it's probably really disappointing to have to admit that maybe it wasn't 50,000 people who liked that page of yours, it makes a lot more sense to feel confident that those 30,000 that like your page are real people who really do like your brand. And those are the people you'd want to reach.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see this whole faker culture online. You know, we saw it, we've talked about it a lot on the show with Twitter and Twitter fakers, people who are buying Twitter Twitter followers, and then with Facebook and Facebook likes and people trying to scam the system. And it's fun to watch that kind of tug of war between the companies putting out these services and the people who are trying to fake it on these services. I guess the good news based on this article is unless you're like Justin Bieber and you're losing thousands of likes, for most people, it seems like they won't be impacted in a significant way. It seems like a pretty small percentage of people who have those brand pages will lose followers. So it's not going to be a massive thing for a lot of different businesses out there as far as the damage it may do to them.
Yeah, I agree. So Amber, how often have you said to yourself, you know, it sure would be nice if there was a way to get all of my tweets off of Twitter so that if for some reason I just wanted to look up what I might have said a couple of years ago on a particular day, I could have access to that? Because we know that there's really no way to search through your own tweet archives unless you're going to scroll back manually, which nobody does more than a week or so.
Yeah, I mean, that's frustrated me a lot with Twitter, I think. And I think also for anyone who has any type of business on Twitter and is pushing out tweets, just the ability to go back into the past to see what you've put out there. Yeah, I've often tried to go back and it's not an easy thing to see anything beyond a week. So it looks like based on this article that the CEO of Twitter has said recently that potentially by the end of the year, people will be able to download all of their tweets. So a lot of people will probably be excited about this. I believe he said this at the Online News Association meeting. And I think it's a good move because I feel as though once you put that information out there on Twitter, it's always difficult to search and to find it. So a lot of people may take advantage of this in a good way.
I agree. I hope that that's something that Twitter can offer by the end of the year. The end of the year is not that far away
soon.
Now. So you figure if he's saying this is going to happen by the end of the year, it's probably something that they feel confident they can do. He had mentioned earlier in the summer that was something that Twitter was working on. I don't feel like, I mean, of course, if that's an option for me, of course, I'm going to download tweets and look through them. And who knows what format they're even going to be in. It might not even be able to search them very well. But at least it's the opportunity to have data that I've contributed quite a bit to over the years. And I really have no access to now. So, Twitter's been a very controversial company lately for other reasons. So this is something that, hey, if this is a free service that they're giving to me, I will take it.
Exactly. All right, Sarah, I never thought that we would talk about this particular company ever again on the Social Hour. I thought it was over for them. I thought they were in the social media graveyard, so to speak. However, I cannot deny how many tweets I saw recently about the new MySpace and the new design to MySpace. And gulp, this hurts me to say it, how many people are saying how beautiful it is. and it kind of is.
Yeah. So we don't actually have a working prototype yet. We were only given a video. If you go to new.myspace.com, there's a video that aims to sort of walk you through what you can expect from the new MySpace. Now, Justin Timberlake is one of the actual new owners of MySpace. So you see a lot of him in this video. That, you know, we're not all going to be as popular as Justin Timberlake on any new MySpace or any social network at all. But it shows how he would be connected to certain people and the things that he would be sharing. And you look at this, and it's very Pinteresty. I hate to use that as an adjective, but it's what it reminds me of. There's a little bit of a, almost like a Windows 8 tile thing going on that it reminds me of. And I mean that in a good way. Because I think it's, you know, it's very nice looking. It's visually very beautiful. I don't even know what I think this looks like. It could be a Tumblr template. But this is not the MySpace that I remember. This doesn't look like anything MySpace would have ever put out just a few short years ago. And it doesn't really mean anything for who's going to come back to MySpace. But yeah. I am very intrigued.
Is design going to bring the people back? I don't know. It could be interesting. However, I feel as though with MySpace, it's really a tough sell. You know, there have been so many MySpace jokes over the past few years, and they did so many things wrong as far as their design. Can they actually climb back out and be successful again among the mainstream audience? I know there's lots of musicians who continue to use the service, but I don't know what to say. I mean, part of me thinks, geez, maybe they could have a big comeback. Maybe Facebook will kind of decline and all of a sudden people will go to MySpace. I mean, if I look at the two sites side by side, immediately I'm going to think, well, MySpace looks more beautiful. But I don't think I would be super fast to switch over. But I did request an invite, of course.
Yep, I did too. That's the first. It's like, I want to be part of beautiful social network. Do not care what social network is. Give me access to beautiful network, which is, it's kind of fun. MySpace, I think, has gone so away to the point where, and you're right, there are people who are still using MySpace and particularly in the music space, but it's almost like, I was about to compare it to a BlackBerry phone, but I'm not going to because, I don't know, it's just not going to get me anywhere. But it's almost like MySpace it's so out of the running that I almost wanted to come back with a vengeance.
I know.
You know, like, take back some of that Facebook fire. And people almost might root for MySpace, which is just, I can't even believe I'm saying that.
Yeah, but it's almost been long enough. You know, they've been out of the picture and they've not been a major player long enough that I feel as though they deserve a break, you know? So it would be something that you could potentially support if the experience was really great. So I think this is going to be one that we're going to be updating and watching for a while as we see what happens. And of course, as we get invites and we're able to go in and play around with their own profiles, then we'll show it off on the show. So we'll see what happens. I don't want to say exactly what I predict, but I'm just not sure till we play around with it.
Yeah. Hey, so Amber, I know that you're a pretty big LinkedIn fan, and more so since their social sort of news feed has gotten a little bit better. And you're not the only one to think so. And LinkedIn now has something called LinkedIn Endorsements where you can give kudos to people. What do you think about this?
I think this is neat. So basically the idea being that you'll be able to endorse someone, particularly around their skills and expertise. So if they say that they're good at video editing, for example, or graphic design, you'll be able within one click to simply endorse them so that other people can see that they are well-skilled in that particular skill. So I think it's kind of a neat thing to do. I wonder in some ways with these kind of one-click endorsements and the likes on the web, if maybe people take them for granted and there's not as much value in them. I think a recommendation on LinkedIn, a written recommendation, it still has more value, but I think this could be helpful for people out there who are trying to find work and trying to build up their expertise in a certain area.
I think so too. And there have definitely been times where someone says, can you please endorse me? And I would love to. But you know, you get an email that's reminding you that someone would like an endorsement. And that's the sort of thing that you want to put a little effort into and explain in a paragraph or so why this person would be, a great asset and this and that. And sometimes you go like, yes, I would love to do that. I want to do it later. And then it kind of becomes this burden. And being able to say, yeah, I vouch for that person and that's all I really have to do right now, is very attractive to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. So it does make it easy. I wouldn't rely, if I were a job seeker, entirely just on those one-click endorsements, but I do think it can enhance your overall profile on LinkedIn, and that's helpful for a lot of people. So yeah, continue to be impressed with LinkedIn, particularly as you get access to just more information and more social tools too.
So it's a good one. So moving on to everybody's favorite social network, that's Clout. I say that with a smile just because Clout has gotten some bad press, but it's not going anywhere. And in fact, it's gotten some backing from a little company you may have heard about called Microsoft, who believes in Clout Scores enough to integrate Clout Scores into Bing search. What am I talking about? So the deal is that the startup Clout has just signed a strategic investment and partnership with the giant Microsoft, which not only involves funding Microsoft giving Clout some money, but it's also a business relationship with the Bing team over at Microsoft. So you're going to start seeing Clout scores, which of course is, you know, those are measurements that are supposed to be representative of, you know, how many likes your Facebook page has, how many Twitter followers you have, who else is influential that follows you on various social networks, if you have a Wikipedia page, and so on. So the number is supposed to be representative of your social reach and, you know, what you're an expert in and that sort of thing. This is going to be a number that Bing will integrate, and you're going to see it on Bing when you search for example, it'll show Clout scores for the people who know section of the right-hand column when you search for something on Bing, because it's a social search bar. We've talked about that in the past on the show. So if you searched for Facebook advertising, for example, you'd see people who have what Clout considers proven enterprise expertise showing up. Now, that's not always going to be great, but I think for the most part, Clout scores, you do get a wild card in there every once in a while. Like, I think I was influential about moms at one point when I looked at, you know, my Clout statistics, and it's like, I don't even know what that means. I have a mom, but that's about it. That's all I really know about moms.
I think they've gotten better, though, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not as though I've turned around and I'm a big Clout fan, but I think we did talk a couple of episodes ago about how Clout has changed things around so that they're a little better at guessing what you're influential about, and there are fewer mistakes, like you mentioned. And I don't know. I mean, I don't use Clout all that much anymore. However, I can't help but think this is kind of interesting, the way things are going. I'm not sure that this is kind of the one solution that's going to change everything, but it does make sense in my mind that if you were to search someone, all of a sudden to have their Clout score attached to them and showing that they have some type of expertise or Clout in that area, it kind of makes sense, although it may not always be right.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of you don't want to think of it as a grain of salt type of a thing, because then it just becomes a Bing feature that people don't pay that much attention to. I really feel like Clout is... It upsets people because they don't like numbers associated with people. So if I have a Clout score of 50 and someone else has a Clout score of 60, I feel like they're better than me somehow, you know? So there's a little bit of that jealousy, and, you know, who wants to be 50 when you could be 75? And then if someone has a really high Clout score, then they can, you know, kind of feel good about themselves, but maybe also take the approach of, well, so-and-so is just as great as me as something, and they have a much lower score than me, so Clout sucks. It, you know, it's not representative of the kind of people that we are. But I do think that you're right. Clout has gotten better. They've fleshed out what makes a Clout number, and it's not just based on popularity. And I think it's, you know, at its core, a pretty good idea. It's just that people don't like being ranked. So it's either something we have to get used to, or they just have to make sure that it doesn't become a hurt feelings personal type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I do agree with that. I mean, I think more and more the social media space feels a little bit like high school as far as how many followers you have, how many likes you have, how many, if you're verified or not, your clout score, all of these different things, right? And it seems as soon as someone kind of perfects the system to be able to rate an individual, then someone figures out how to game the system. And I'm sure the same thing will happen with clout and some of these scores that show up within search. I think, unfortunately, that's just the state that we're in today. People want that. Not everyone, but I don't see it going away anytime soon. And the integration, I don't know, it could be kind of interesting. We talked about this at length, but I don't think you can evaluate an individual based just solely on their clout score. However, you know, it's one indicator in terms of their success in a certain area.
Yeah, and it's very interesting that Microsoft is like, we believe in clout. We'd like to give clout some money. We'd like to get into a business relationship with clout and figure out how that can flesh out our social strategy, particularly with Bing. Because we know that Google, I mean, if you think about the other search engine that Bing wants to compete with, I mean, that's all Google Plus stuff. And that's being integrated into Google, their search engine, more than ever before. So two different strategies here, but very interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, Sarah, to kick off the end of our first news pack, we have a video that everybody either loves or hates. The Gangnam Style video out of South Korea looks like it has just broken a Guinness World Record. In fact, it has the most likes on YouTube based on this particular article on shinyshiny.tv with more than 2 million likes and counting. The views are up there as well. I think more than 227 million people have viewed the video, according to Mashable. So they have broken the Guinness World Record for a couple of things. And I don't know. I mean, it's a hilarious video. The mashups are great. It just never ends.
Yeah, it never ends, all right. I don't know. I am so sick of it. Okay, so I don't know what the... I've seen him on all of the daytime talk shows. Well, that's not true. I saw him on Ellen. That's one talk show. But I know that he's kind of done the rounds, because all of the, you know, the mainstream media goes, oh, there's this crazy video, let's get him on our show. And then we have Eric Schmidt dancing with Psy, and it's just like, oh, it's gone into sad parents dancing at the wedding territory. So I am just so over Gangnam Style, I can't even tell you. However, I still think I understand why you at least watch it, you know, once or twice. And we've had a few of our parodies here at Twit as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the parodies keep coming. This may horrify you, Sarah, and to people who are hating this song and want it to go away forever. But I was just reading an article yesterday about a dance class that was started in British Columbia. It's a Gangnam Style dance class. And in fact, they filled up so quickly that they're having another dance class. So you can go there and you just basically learn the dance in the video and other dances that are similar to that particular dance. So it doesn't seem to be stopping. It's just going and going and going. I think it's kind of, I think the video is pretty hilarious. I have watched it a lot, I'm not going to lie. the mashups are, you know, some of them are pretty cheesy, but some of them are also good. So I haven't hit the point you've hit yet, Sarah, but it could happen. I could see the potential of getting really irritated.
Bitter and angry too. I mean, there are things like this. For some reason, they start really bothering me when they get too popular. With the exception of Rebecca Black, who can do no wrong in my eyes. She's a lovely little lady. But yeah, I don't know. You know what? The whole fitness thing, that's another spin on it. If something's going to get somebody out there and moving, you dance all you want. And if that's what you want to dance, that's how you want to dance to that song, get your heart rate up, then go for it. Who am I to say that's a bad idea? And well, yes, I actually did watch a few behind-the-scenes videos as Bill Amber, so I watched it more than twice.
I watched it.
But that was a long time ago, you know, before it was cool.
Of course, of course. I totally understand. Yeah, it's been fun to watch this. So I don't think that's going to end. I give it, let's see, Sarah, when do you think it's going to slow down? I give it 6 weeks, and it's done.
Oh, yeah, if that.
What do you think?
If that. I say in a month, anyone who references it on Twitter, everyone will be like, oh gosh, that guy, were you on vacation? Or, you know, like, have you been living under a rock?
Social media etiquette.
Yeah, you got one more month, Sai, and then that's it. Get another song, or you're done for. I'd love to know how it's been received in South Korea. Is it the sort of thing where it's like eye rolling? Oh yeah, this guy, look at him. Or is it even a bigger hit? I don't know.
I read an article about his father, and I should probably not quote this because I just skimmed the article and I can't remember where it's from, but basically along the lines of, I don't know if his father has a public company or runs a public company, but the stock had like increased dramatically because of the popularity of his son, and some just really like offbeat news that's coming out of this. So, like I say, 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks. And counting. All right, quick reminder that if you are watching us live, thank you so much. We record the show Friday afternoons, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It's always nice to have everybody in chat who's following along with us, or maybe you're a lurker and you just like to watch or listen to the feed. That's cool, too. But remember, if you don't watch us live, we're on demand. All Twit programming is, and we don't really care how you absorb the wonder and beauty that is the Social Hour, as long as you do somehow. If you go to twit.tv/TSH, that is where all of our show archives live. So not only do you have easy, handy links to download video or stream it right from our episode pages, but all of the stuff that we talk about in every show, links to stories and videos and tips and all that good stuff is in each of our episode page. You can see right down there in the bottom. Those are all the links from, I guess, last week, right? And yes, episode 78, because we're on 79 now. So that is the place to go. Also, we have subscription links there, too. So if you want to watch our show regularly and you don't really want to think about when we're shooting live, you just want to have a new episode when it's done, that's the best way to do it. Remember, subscribing doesn't cost anything. It is completely free. We don't make you pay for Twit content. So thanks to everybody who watches and listens to us every week. All right, Amber, we've got some tips, we've got spotlights, we've got viewer feedback and more. But first, let's take a moment to thank Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. There are quite a few categories of apps that are coming to the Ford Sync platform. And you might say, oh, like what? I mean, how many apps could a car really integrate, right? How about location-based services? How about ability to find friends? How about financial service apps? Those are just a few of the things that Ford is actively working on for its Sync platform, which is really ahead of the game. No other car company can claim anything like this. Stuff like lane departure warnings, lane centering features, using onboard cameras. So this is all, it's kind of next-gen safety, right, that we could all use in our cars. But many of us think, wow, that seems like, you know, something that you'd see in the future. That's stuff that Ford takes very seriously and is working on. Using the cloud to connect information and services that you not only are using in your vehicle, but you've also got at home and at the office. Because if you're like me, I do a fair amount of work at home. I'm in my car every single day. Then I've got my office stuff, and everything needs to be integrated. And being in my car is really part of that ecosystem because I want my stuff synced. Ford Social, social.ford.com. If you haven't been there, it's really cool. It's one of the ways that you can see what the engineering team at Ford is working on. But not just that, you can submit ideas that you think are good and viable that Ford should maybe take a look at, maybe think about implementing into its Ford Sync platform as well. Maybe you don't have a great idea, but you kind of want to see what everybody else has going on. You can look at other people's ideas. It's not just idea, by the way. You know, they'll have explanations as how this would be implemented and what it would look like. And you can vote stuff up or down. So it truly is kind of that social experience that's a lot of fun. While you're at social.ford.com, you can not only like your favorite ideas, but you can also grab a badge. The Tech Geek badge is kind of the one that we all should have, right? Because if you're watching or you're listening, then I think you would probably associate yourself with being a tech geek. So there's a little bit of that fun badge thing where you can say, yeah, I mean, I'm a tech geek. This is something that I should have. And you can tell a few more people about social.ford.com while you're there. And you know, you can brag a little bit that you've got the tech geek badge. It's not hard to get, by the way. It's just something that it's kind of fun to have. You can also read a blog post that Leo submitted. He had a discussion with Jim Buzkowski, who really knows what's going on behind the scenes as far as what Ford is rolling out in its future models. So check it out at social.ford.com. And thanks to Ford, as always, for sponsoring the Social Hour. All right, we've got a social tip. Amber, this is something that you pulled up. about Twitter and their new profile pages.
Yeah, so we touched on this last week. So you're able to add a new header to your Twitter profile. Obviously, it's not a perfect experience. The first time around that you try to do it, you'll see that the text, the overlay text that goes on top of your basic information on Twitter, if you have an image that has a bunch of text or patterns or weird colors sometimes, that it just doesn't show up that well. So the good news is that Mashable has written an article, 4 quick tips for a better Twitter header, that we'll put into our show notes. And basically, these are tips around selecting an image. So the size of the image, talking about how to use a landscape-oriented photo that looks better than a portrait photo, for example, the text against the background as well. This is another tip as far as making sure that perhaps in your background image that you don't have any text so it doesn't compete with the text in your bio, and a few other things as well. It also talks about how the design looks different across different devices. So keeping that in mind too, and some examples of Twitter header profiles that are done well and some of that are done poorly. So a good read for anyone wondering how to get the most out of their Twitter header profile. And I know a lot of people are asking about that.
Yeah, this is good stuff. And it matters more than you think. I had thrown up a picture of an It's It ice cream sandwich for my cover background photo, whatever you call it. And it is too busy, and it's hard to read my bio. And so it's absolutely true. And you can see, for anybody who's watching the video version of this, is some of the background images. I mean, you choose what you want. It's all personal, right? There's not a wrong way to do it. But there are certain images where you go, that just looks good. And if you're using your Twitter feed as kind of a landing page, especially for either company branding or even personal branding, that's the sort of thing that you want to look polished and nice. And see, that's mine. It's that there's too much letters behind my bio and the color's all wrong. And it just looks stupid. I got to work on it.
Actually, my initial reaction when I saw your Twitter header profile is that, so it's a type of ice cream bar?
Oh, Amber, you don't know about It's It's?
No, what are they?
They are the best thing in the world. Let me tell you a little bit about them. This is a San Francisco company. It goes back a long time. And actually, that's all I know about it, really. It's just an ice cream sandwich that's really good. And it's made in San Francisco. It's actually made in, like, Burlingame or something now, which is not that far away from the city, but it's a San Francisco treat. And what it is it's cookie. It's two pieces of cookie. And in the middle is either like vanilla ice cream, chocolate ice cream, coffee ice cream, or mint ice cream, depending on what kind you get. And then the whole thing is dipped in chocolate. And then you eat it and your life is better. And a friend of mine who used to work at Google, because I talk about It's It's a lot, because I have a little bit of a problem, he told me that when he was working there, Google wanted to have It's It's on campus because they knew that they would be popular. But at the time, It's It's used partially hydrogenated fat and oils, which is really bad for you. And Google got them to change their recipe. So now when you eat an It's It, it's actually full of sugar, but it's natural.
Yeah. Wow. That is so interesting.
What's up now? I know. Power of Google compels
them. I need
them
to try one.
Oh, they're so good. I eat them way more than I should. But anyway, that's the story of It's It.
Too funny. I used to be like that with Dairy Queen Blizzards, which I'm sure many people are familiar with. I would eat them all the time. I absolutely love them. And then one day, a friend of mine and I decided to go into the store just to see their little calorie, you know, the menu system they have with all the calories attached. And I found out there was like, some of the Blizzards were like 1,250 calories.
Oh, yes.
And I was so horrified.
That's the sort of thing where it's like, you know, where there'll be the, you know, Pinkberry, for example, you know, the Froyo craze. And they'll have the little books at the checkout counter where you look and see, you know, the calorie content, what's actually in all of this stuff. And some of the restaurants and people have to now display that information. And it's like, you know that you just don't want to know. You just don't. You should know. You should have the ability to know. But when I'm eating that pint of ice cream or the third It's It, you know, alone and shameful at home, I know what I'm doing is wrong.
I know.
I just don't.
We took the calorie printout and we put it on our fridge because I was living with two other girlfriends at the time. And then we put this, we wrote on it and Marker said, before you think about having a Blizzard, take a look at this. We left it in there for the whole year. because we were a little mortified about it. Not that I've ever been one to, you know, be super particular about my weight, but I mean, when you get into like 1200 calories for basically something that's this big, you sort of have to reconsider your diet a little bit. It's not a good thing.
Agreed. Let's hop over into something that could actually, well, it encompasses good food, bad food, and everything in between, because our spotlight this week is the new version of Foursquare, which puts a lot more emphasis on not only maps, but what is nearby you that you'd be interested in. Obviously, maps are such a hot topic right now because iOS 6 has a new map app that Apple is building natively, and it's pretty subpar, and people are pretty angry about it. So let's talk about something that actually makes use of maps that is really helpful. This is actually the new Foursquare, and of course I'm looking at it on my iPhone 4S because my new iPhone isn't here yet, but you can access Foursquare a variety of other ways. So I'm just Foursquare goes ahead and loads. And once I'm here, if I hit the Explore tab, which has been here for a while, the Explore tab isn't new, but this is something that has been fleshed out a little bit. And this is exploring stuff based on where I am. So based on a map near where I am physically right now, Foursquare is thinking a little bit. Okay. And now I've got some options here. Let's go back up to the top because I think... Oh, okay. Well, this is interesting. Okay, so I'm looking at Top Picks in Petaluma. Now, it's saying to me, is it time for a coffee break? You know, it's 2:11 p.m. Maybe you'd like some coffee. Here's Pete's Coffee and Tea. It's pretty close to you. And you've got some friends who have been here already. Wow, George Reese has been to the Petaluma Starbucks, huh? Oh, he must have visited Twit one day. You know George, don't you remember?
Yeah, I do.
And then if I say, well, I don't know, I don't like Pete's. Their coffee sucks. Then I've got choices for more coffee nearby. So again, this is using the maps data that Foursquare has been collecting, not only from me, but my friends and everyone else who uses the service, to give me some more options of where I could get coffee that's nearby me. But that's not all. It says, hey, reminder that the Water Street Bistro is something that you saved to your to-do list whenever. I don't even remember that I did that, but I obviously did at some point. So Foursquare is reminding me, not only did you say you wanted to go there, but it's nearby you. That might be an option for you. And then there's a bunch of other stuff. If you want to grab a bite somewhere, this is places that are known for food. If you want to just try a new place, you know, something that I've definitely never checked into before, it'll offer me up the Walnut Park Grill. I know some people that I work with go there, so maybe it's good kind of thing. It'll let me know who's been there. And then it's been a few weeks. Well, it's been a few weeks since I was at the Twit Brickhouse Studios because I just don't check in here, so that's not very good. But for the most part, it gives me information on stuff that's nearby with a lot of context. Either, cool. Hey, Sarah, reminder, you said you wanted to go here. Maybe today's the day. Or it might be time for, you know, a little pick-me-up. Friends have said that this is a great place. So I think that something like this, when it comes to I'm either in an unfamiliar place or I want something different, makes so much more sense to me than just looking at my location on any map, whether it's Apple Maps or Google Maps or somebody else's map, and just seeing what's nearby without the context.
Yeah, that looks really cool. It looks like they've done a really nice job of that.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I love it. I think Foursquare probably... I'm sure they must be jealous with the deep Yelp integration that iOS 6 has now. I mean, when you look up something on Apple Maps and you want to get a little bit more information about an establishment that shows up on the map, that's all Yelp data. And so Foursquare and Yelp don't work exactly the same, but Foursquare has a lot of that similar type of data where people can vouch for a restaurant or a service or a place, that sort of thing. And so they've got a lot of that data, and it's nice to remember that you can put it to good use, if you're a Foursquare user, of course.
Very cool. Now, speaking of cool, Sarah, it looks like we have a voicemail from someone from Lance who has a better possible explanation for how ads could be displayed on a device. We were talking about this on a past episode of The Social Hour as far as the mobile experience, how ads may interfere with that, because it's a very personal thing as far as your relationship with your smartphone, and you have to be just a little bit delicate in terms of pushing out advertisements. But if he has a solution, it's good to have a voicemail from him.
Hey, ladies, this is Lance from Las Vegas. On your show on Friday, you had a caller calling in regarding ads for, I guess, her iPod Touch, which I think maybe it was misunderstood. I think I know exactly what she's speaking about because a company that I've worked for is actually doing that. It's not an actual push notification, or like on Windows Phone, it would be like what's called a toast notification, something that pops up, sounds like a system message or something similar. What it actually is, it's like a pre-roll. If you use Pandora for the iPhone and other devices, if you notice you're listening to music and then whoosh, the whole interface gets covered up by an ad. Well, in this case, I think what she's speaking about is a little rollover on the program, not a push notification or toast notification, basically just something that rolls down with an ad, or it could be a full screen ad depending on the company. But I think that's more of what she was talking about. Anyways, love the show. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't like the idea, but it's not as if we're not used to advertising within apps themselves here and there. I don't know. What do you think about Lance's explanation of how ads might actually work?
I feel like I need to see it, you know, in terms of, I've seen advertisements done, obviously, in the mobile space that have been done well. So it's almost as though it depends on the execution of that, right? And I know this is not an advertisement, but I had an experience recently where I was downloading an app. The app is, it's called Layout, I believe. And it's just a really fun iOS app that allows you to put a few pictures in a bunch of different frames and send them out to your friends on Twitter, Instagram, wherever. Anyway, the reason I mention this is off the top, it forced you to use the app before you actually went into it. And normally, if someone told me that, I'd think that's a terrible idea. But the way that they did it with Layout, it was so seamless. You know, they said, oh, good job, next step. And you went through like three or four easy little steps. So it wasn't as intrusive as I thought it could be. So I think it's more about the execution and actually seeing it in the works. That was a really long answer.
Yeah, it's something that I don't think we're going to get away from this. And Lance, I think you hit on some points that I'm sure companies are trying to figure out. So thanks for giving us a few more ways to look at how monetization of mobile might actually play out. We also got a video from Andy who has an idea for if you want to link to an Instagram account, let's say on your blog or something, it's kind of hard to do that because Instagram doesn't really have a web presence. You could link to a permalink of a picture, but he's got a better idea about how to link to an actual account.
So I found this website called Followgram, which handily gives you a QR code. So if you actually scan it from a mobile device, it will open the Instagram app for you. Now, if you grab the URL from that, which should look something like that, obviously after the equals it's whatever your own username is, and then you link back to that from your blog, website, whatever, it actually does something quite cool. So it will actually just open the Instagram app, which is the only way I've found of actually doing this. And you can obviously do it for other people's pages as well. So I've got another account, but if you wanted to link to somebody else, it would just open theirs, and then it's the actual app for you, which is absolutely great. And the other good thing about it is if you're just on a browser on a PC, it'll actually take you to the Followgram account, and then you can actually follow them from there as well. So yeah, that's my Instagram tip. If you want to follow me, I'm RapidANDI, and thank you very much.
Great idea.
That is a really great idea.
It makes so much sense. This is a QR code I would use all the time because what I do often, Amber, is I figure out someone's Instagram account. And then I go to Instagram, and then I do a search for a user, and then I type in the username, and then I find their account, and then I follow them from there. So that works, but it's a little cumbersome. This would be a lot easier.
Yeah, that's very cool. And awesome little video in terms of showing how it works. You might have a career at Twit, Sarah. You never know.
It's
pretty good.
Rapid Andy. It's Andy with an I.
What's his Twitter name? Did he say Rapid Andy? Oh, okay. Rapid Andy?
Yeah. Rapid Andy. Andy with an I.
Make sure to follow it. That's awesome.
By the way, the more videos that have like cool tips like that you send, the better. We love that kind of crowdsourced tip stuff. So thank you, Andy. Hopefully we'll get a lot more that we can roll in next week.
Yeah. Look at Andy's Twitter profile header. Speaking of an interesting use of a header, it's very, very, very creative.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay,
it's
Alex,
really
cool.
Okay,
Alex, you got to pull that up.
What was the name again?
Rapid Andy, A-N-D-I, on Twitter.
It's kind of disturbing, but it's cool.
Not Rabbit Andy. Mooncat in chat says Rabbit Andy, and I don't want anything.
That's what I typed into.
Rapid Andy.
Rapid Andy. I know, it took me a sec to get it.
Oh, that is good. Whoa, how'd you do that?
Isn't he cool?
He's a trickster.
He is a trickster.
Okay. Well, all right, that's cool.
Very cool.
I like you already, Rapid Andy. And you're in London, so you're just that much better because London's awesome. Hey, so we were talking about some spotlighting a little bit more of social media business side of stuff and future shows. So we've come upon our social media campaign spotlight for this show.
Yes. Yeah, so this one is a little bit confusing, Sarah. I don't know if you had a chance to read. There are a bunch of different articles. It's from Benetton or Benetton. I don't know how you pronounce it, but I know they were popular. I think when I was in junior high school, at least they had a very popular rugby shirt that everybody wore. And they've just come out with a social media campaign. It's called Unemployee of the Year. The idea is to put the spotlight on the millions of young people who, in fact, don't have jobs, people who are between 18 and 30 years old. And through the campaign, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get people to suggest projects that they can do to improve the lives of other people. And the idea being that others can vote on these projects. And the winning 100 people, I think, will get $6,500 to actually put those projects into action. So it sounds a little bit like the Pepsi Refresh project that was very popular a couple of years ago. They may still be doing it. The idea of social good, people harnessing the power of the web to raise money and do something great in their community. So an interesting concept. There is some criticism online about this particular campaign because they've spent so much money on the campaign itself. In fact, tens of millions of dollars on the campaign, and it's very flashy. There's a great video that they have here highlighting how many young people just in fact don't have jobs, and some people also wondering if at the back end of this campaign, if perhaps they could have done more to help young people, and maybe their execution could be a little bit different. What I mean by that, there's an article on The Guardian in the UK that says that other campaigns like this that offer money for people to do special projects in fact also come with training and helping people to develop skills to build out those projects and to potentially get jobs and kind of to further the experience. So doesn't seem like a perfect campaign, obviously a fantastic cause. I don't know. What do you think, Sarah?
Well,
it's confusing a little bit.
Yeah, it is a little bit confusing. So people have an issue with the production value because so much money has been spent on kind of the flashy nature of it. I mean, we're watching this video and it's obviously extremely well done, but
sure.
I don't know. I haven't looked at the budget in detail to know if money was spent well, but I do think that something that is made well ends up being shared a lot because it doesn't look like it's some amateur thing. I mean, that alone gets Benetton attention.
Sure. And I don't think it's just a video. I think it's the overall campaign. I mean, I saw some numbers out there, I think in excess of $20 million potentially being spent on that campaign. And then if you do the math with the $6,500 being given to 100 young people, you see how much more money is being spent on the campaign itself than actually helping young people. You can see how it's a little bit unequal. Because we don't have access to all the numbers, it's really hard to judge that. I think it's a really cool idea, great cause and an important topic for people to talk about and to raise awareness about. I would just argue that as far as the execution of the campaign, even when you go to the homepage of that campaign, I think it's a little bit frustrating because you don't exactly know right away how you can participate. It's almost as the video and some of the stuff is a little too high-end, a little too artsy, that I don't think they speak maybe to the everyday person as well. And that's just my initial feedback on it.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. It does get a lot of awareness is being raised, but yeah, exactly. I mean, the point of this is there are a lot of people who are not only in need of jobs, you know, but there are money issues that arise from that. And then you've got a campaign where so much money is going to the campaign in order to raise awareness so that the campaign can keep going. You know, there is a little bit of like a self-fulfilling cycle, especially for any brand that's associated with it.
And I think sometimes you can get too clever with a social media campaign. You know, you end up almost just being, I don't want to say too highbrow, but like too clever in some of the collateral that you put out there into the social media community. And maybe you just don't explain things well enough. And this might fall into that category. But who knows? I mean, this is just early days of this campaign. It may last. It may be great. But I do think even when the Pepsi launched the Refresh Project, when you went to the site, it was very obvious how you could participate, how you could try to get money for a cause that you cared about, how you could get people to vote. And it was really clear and really well executed. So great cause, but we'll just watch this one.
All right. If anybody has at least some initial first thoughts about this, do let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Any of the stuff that we talk about on the show, we'd love to know your feedback, your ideas, your questions, comments, a variety of ways you can get a hold of us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address. You can also leave us a voicemail, 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626-SOCIAL. If you're calling from another country, you'd have to add our country code, which is 1. But we'd love to get your voicemails. Try to keep them to 30 seconds or less. That same goes for a video. If you can record a video, upload it somewhere, and send us the link to where that video lives, we'd be happy to play it on the show. Rapid Andy did just earlier in the show. Okay, so we've got Amber's Rad or Fad still to come in just a second. But first, let's take a moment to thank a very new sponsor, a brand new sponsor. Welcome to SAP. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. So here's the deal. Obviously, anybody who's working on brands knows that a lot of the conversation about your brand happens via the social avenues, right? So if somebody wants to praise you, they might do so on Facebook or Twitter, but that also might be the place where they rake you over the coals for something that they consider to be a really bad social customer experience. And if you work at a large enterprise, you know that it can be hard to stay on top of this stuff because you're getting a lot of feedback from people, and that's where Social Media Solutions from SAP comes in. It helps people working at large enterprises, particularly, be able to listen and engage with people via social media in a systematic way. So there's two components to this. There's the listening component and there's the engaging component. The listening component is pretty much what's being said about your brand. Is it good? Is it bad? It captures that information and then it gives you reports on conversations about relevant terms and then sort of like passion level of people. So it knows using something called natural language processing, and this is really cool, how to intelligently get the difference between me saying, this app has never been good, or this app has never been this good. Those are two very different things, right? And sometimes robots can't tell the difference when they're looking at, you know, a bunch of text on Twitter. That's where Social Media Solutions from SAP really shines. The engaging component is sort of the second aspect of all of this. So you can improve your customer support by setting rules like, if I get a message that is about this type of a thing, this is who it should go to. This is how they should deal with this. So you can kind of set parameters for getting solutions in place to common problems or even problems that are, you know, a little bit out of left field. So if somebody tweets a tech support problem, you might not be the person who has the answer, but you can get it to the right person and you don't have to do a whole lot of thinking about that because you can use social media solutions to get that problem to the right person. So again, Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you an accurate and real-time understanding of your brand's social media performance. Anybody who works in social media knows that this is extremely important, and it's definitely something to take a look at. If you want to know more, go to sap.com. That's sap.com/twit. That's sap.com/twit. And see if this is the sort of thing that will help your company use social media better. You know, you don't want to be the company that seems like they have a presence but doesn't do anything. And we all know those brands that just seem to be failing at social media on a regular basis. Don't be that guy. Use sap.com/twit. And thanks again to them for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Hey, Amber, I was thinking that you might want to present something that could be rad or could be fad to all of the
I
folks
do. But before I do that, I just wanted to also thank the folks over at SAT because one of the guys, it looks like he just tweeted us while you're doing the ad, Sarah. So they are watching and fans of the show. And you can follow them at SAP Social OD. And they have lots of great content about how to do social right. So I just wanted to mention that they had a little shout out when you're in the middle of the ad. No pressure, though, Sarah. No pressure.
Cool. No, that's great.
It's awesome. So, okay, so rad or fad. This one is kind of interesting. We've talked a lot on the show about business cards and the evolution of business cards. You know, are we still going to be carrying paper around in our pocket months or years down the road, or is it going to go away forever? And it looks like the folks over at Moo, we've also talked about them before, has kind of taken business cards to the next level, or is planning to, at least in 2013. The idea being having a business card with NFC power, so near field communications. You would order a business card, for example, from Moo. It would have a little chip in it, and you could program that NFC tag to do what you wanted it to do based on when someone was coming with a smartphone and tapping on the business card. They could be sent, for example, to a video or to a website or to a place that you have chosen when you set this all up. So basically, the concept being taking business cards to the next level, this is a little bit different than simply having a QR code on your business card. It could be easier down the road, except obviously not all phones have NFC capabilities. I think it's kind of cool, I have to say.
I think so, too. I think everything Moo does seem pretty cool.
Yes, I think they're cool. Yeah, they seem like a really cool company.
They are a cool company. If you're not familiar with Moo, we actually talked about them recently. Moo.com, because the company bought Flavors.me. Was that last week, or was it within the last 2 weeks we talked about this?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, so they're on a rampage right now of coolness. Mm-hmm. I love this. Hey, if business cards can be cooler, more power to you, Moo, because that's the thing about business cards is that they seem kind of analog and a little bit clunky, and they take up space, and you lose them easily, and you sort of forget who's who. So the NFC aspect of it actually turns into a, wow, this is actually at the forefront of technology all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And I know some people don't really believe in NFC, but I think that there are definite places that it makes an experience better. And certainly when it comes to stuff like contacts, that's where it can really shine.
It really cool works. Too. I think it's neat. Like, I'm thinking of a scenario if I go to a conference and I do a lot of on-air hosting, and I could have a demo reel, for example. So when I give someone my card and they were to access the information in the card, maybe that's my demo reel that they can watch immediately. I mean, there's no more powerful tool than something like that. So the idea of facilitating that relationship and making it easier to present information about yourself immediately, I think is really interesting, and I think it deserves a big fat rad.
Fat rad for me, too. Two fat rads.
We haven't had a rad in a while, so this is good.
Yeah,
we've had
a
lot of fads.
You know, I think, yeah, we tend to skew fat a little bit more, and who knows why that is. It's sort of like, this seems like a cool idea, but so often, there are so many cool ideas. We know how that goes, and you think, it's just, is it going to stick? That's the thing. Sometimes things seem, it's not like they're a terrible idea, but it just, you know that it's not going to stick. You can just sort of tell, and that's why we call things fat a lot. But this is definitely rad.
It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
All right, Amber, we've come to the end of our hour. In fact, we went over a little bit, but like we said at the beginning of the show, there was a big week for social this week. So we did what we could. We tried to deliver all the good stuff to you. And don't worry, because we'll be back doing the same thing next week. You know, I mentioned last week that we were going to, for the live viewers, recording a couple of shows early on. And this wasn't actually the week, but next week and the week after, Amber and I will record the weekly episode of The Social Hour at 4 p.m. Pacific time, 7 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. That's just for the next 2 weeks. That comes right after Know How for anybody who watches our live stream on Thursdays here at Twit. So just something to keep in mind. We will update our calendar. If you watch us on demand, not even to worry, but want to make sure that you have a heads up if you really like catching the show live. But that's it for us. Amber, this was a great show. And I don't know. I guess I'll see you online.
I will see you online. And I'm going to hopefully, I know we had this public conversation, but try to get the new host of the stream on the Al Jazeera network to join us at some point.
Yes.
She looks fantastic, and it'd be fun to talk to her about social media news. And I have a couple of ideas too with some social media business people to come on. That could be fun as well. So we'll get some guests.
That'd be great. We haven't had a guest in a few shows now. I'm not sure where she's based, if she's overseas or not, but depending on what time we shoot over the next few weeks, she'll probably have an idea of what makes the most sense for her to be live. But yeah, we're gonna have to do another round of guests.
Yes. I think she's in D.C., so I think it could be okay. So, lots of guests and lots more shows coming up, so it'll be good times.
All right. Until next time, everybody, stay social. I just made that up. That's not really our tagline. I'll see everybody next week.
See you later.